true, but they're necessary in shaping the world. So the examples given by the Midrash Tanchuma is that the creation of the Malach HaMavis, the exile of Yaakov and his family to Egypt, Moshe's inability to enter Eretz Yisrael, all of those were brought about by a specific sin, Adam eating Eitz Hadas, the hatred of Yosef's brothers, Moshe hitting the rock, but nevertheless, death had to be part of the world. It was a necessary result. The Jewish people had to be exiled to Egypt in order to experience the miracles of the Yetzias Mitzrayim. Moshe could not have led the Jewish people into Israel because the Jewish people would have been held to too much of a high standard with him around. So on and so forth. Meaning each of these events, yes, were brought about by a certain Aveira. Because even when Hashem causes a certain catastrophe in order to maintain the purpose of the Bria, the purpose of creation, it's always blended with Midas HaChesed. And that's why small sins don't necessarily get big punishments. But if Hashem were to run the world with just Midas HaDin, the punishments would be much harder. So therefore, when Hashem needs to make a catastrophe, so to speak, He could use Mishpat by reverting it to Midas HaDin. And things get switched around from what it is from our perspective. So based on that, says Reb Chaim Friedlander, you could understand the punishment of the Asara Haruge Malchus was not a punishment for something they did wrong. Their death was a necessary part of the Tachlis HaBriya, of the purpose of creation. The judgment was based on Mishpat because they were judged with Midas HaDin. Every little thing now was being judged to its fullest. Meaning normally we're not judged to our fullest because Hashem doesn't use Midas HaDin with us too much. It's only when it's necessary for certain situations that a certain event needs to happen, that in order to get it to happen, God will use the Midas HaDin mode in order to get there. Okay? In order to get there. So, that's the pshat, by the way. This is beautiful. Fits nicely now with that Gemara Menachos that I quoted, that when God, Moshe asks God, God, why are you doing all this? Why are you killing Akiva this way, flaying his skin? Zu Torah v'zu scharo, that's Torah and that's its reward. God says, shtok, kach aleh b'machshava lefanai. Keep quiet. The words are, carefully, kach aleh b'machshava lefanai. That's the way I wanted it to be. What machshava? So many of the mafarshim say, meaning I'm going back to my original machshava, which was to create the world with midas hadin. Sometimes I find it necessary to use the din mode. That's kach aleva machshava lefanai. That's what it means, that I'm going back to the original machshava. That's the pshat that could be over here in the Ten Martyrs. Rav Soloveitchik says that the reading of the Arzel Vanan over here is different than the Eila Eskara on Yom Kippur. Right? The famous stories are repeated in the Eila Eskara on Yom Kippur. The tone by Yom Kippur is written in a tone of slichus, to get kapara, to get atonement. Just as a korban could bring atonement, so too kach misasan shal tzaddikim mechaperes. So too the death of tzaddikim bring atonement. On Tisha B'Av, here we're mourning the loss of Torah. We're mourning the loss of Torah scholarship. This is not about kapara. This is recognizing what it is we're missing. Okay, Arzelvanan, dear Torah. You know, I had that line at the beginning. It said, Balei Trisin. Balei Trisin are those that have shields, shield bearers. So one way to look at it is that the Torah protects us from things. That's what it means, the shield bearers. Another way of looking at it, Rav Soloveitchik told a great story. He said the shield bearers mean is that they're engaged in the combat of Torah. Two Talmidei Chachamim, they engage in the combat of Torah. So he said a story of Rav Yisrael Salanter, who once visited Rav Abula Preslover, who was also was famous for his lumdus. And they said hello to each other. Rav Abula took Rav Yisrael by the hand, told him to sit down. He opened Gemara Sota and directed his attention to a specific line. Then Rav Yisrael Salanter opened the Darim and showed Rav Abula a line. Rav Abula opened up Shavuos and showed Rav Yisrael Salanter a line. Rav Yisrael Salanter showed him another Gemara. Not a single word was exchanged between them. Rav Soloveitchik says they were engaged in the struggle about a particular point in the Gemara, and they simply needed to point to each part of the text. He says this is the idea of Bali Trisim, shield bearers, that the back and forth is the give and take of the Gemara, the back and forth is the give and take of the Gemara, and the argument over how to defend the Torah, and the different arguments of the Torah itself. It says, Natol et Rosho with Nosno al Kavosov, that Rabbi Shmuel took Rabbi Shimon's head and placed it on his knees. So the question over here is how Rabbi Shmuel, who was a Kohen, could take the dead body of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Right? He was a Kohen. He's not allowed to touch something, Tommy. Oh, beautiful. Beautiful. The Nasi, since Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel was the Nasi, you have to say the Nasi has a status of a Meis Mitzvah. That a person who even a Kohen is allowed to touch. This fits the Yerushalmi in Nazir says that when Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi died, Rav Yanai announced that there's no kahuna today. Why is that? Because whoever comes in contact with the body of a Nasi, he's considered like a Meis Mitzvah. Rambam Paskins this way, Hilchas Avelus, that a Nasi, a prince, has the leader has the status of a Meis Mitzvah, and all could come in contact. Okay, the next one, number 22. Hechrishu mimeni. This talks about the mass suicides which a lot of the European communities committed rather than allowing themselves to convert to Christianity over here. Hechrishu mimeni v'adaveira. Be quiet, allow me to speak, come what may. V'yover, alay ma'chamas ezak v'sadlech shochen shemayma etzikas niruchi lo chol adoma. There's one line in here, very hard to translate. Art Scroll admitted to making a mistake here. I don't know if anybody has the Art Scroll. You have the Art Scroll, Chet? You have Kina number 22? Okay, it should be like a little bit of the way in. The line is, May oz nitarer goy az kore shucha. Well, sorry, first read the Art Scroll's introduction at the top. What does Art Scroll say? Yeah. Does Art Scroll usually puts like an intro thing there or something? Do they have an intro to that one? Or at the bottom? What? Yeah, Vecharishu. Do they have any commentary in the bottom? Yeah, that's their introduction. Go read the introduction of that. You see that what Chet just said? It says this Kina is of an unknown community. The one that are put together from the Rav Soloveitchik says the dates of these massacres are known to us. Art Scroll says we don't know. Dr. David Berger wrote a letter to the based on some of the information in this Kina, We know exactly when it is, and Art Scroll says that they acknowledge that he was right. When they do another printing of it, they'll change it then. It's Kina's composer of Meir Ben Yechiel. Over here it's talking about, this Kina talks about the Churban Beis Hamikdash of the Chachmei Ashkenaz. The dates are known. It's the dates as follows. The Crusades, here's how he calculates. This is how the professor calculates. The Crusades generally started on their journey in the spring. And the massacres took place in the month of Iyar and Sivan around the time of Shavuos. Even though these events didn't occur in Tisha B'Av, they're included in the Kinut and are commemorated in Tisha B'Av because of the principle that the death of the Tzaddikim is equivalent to the burning of the Beis Hamikdash. They refer to those German Torah communities that are listed over here. How we know the date in which period it is because of one line. It says Me'az nit orer goy az koresh shucha. It's translated as the way Art Scroll translates it is ever since a brazen nation arose to dig my grave. Me'az nit orer goy az koresh shucha. But the older texts of this Kina actually have Doresh Shucha. The Goyim came looking for their pit. What's their pit? Mestama, this refers to the spot, the holy sepulcher, the place where they believe Yashka was born and possibly died in Jerusalem. That's the pit that they were looking for, the place where they set up shop over there and said, this is ours. That's what it's referring to. So we know at what point they got it, at what point they found it, and at what point they came with the Crusades. So based on that, we do have more of a time frame of when this Kina would have made sense. Okay, let's do the Kina. Well, we have time frame for all those. We know those dates. The issue is when this poem was written. That's the issue. I mean, it's amazing when you look at this, that the fact that Torah was able to survive under these conditions, the entire major Torah centers of Germany being destroyed, it's probably only able to survive because at the same time, Hashem made it that another community was starting to grow, and that was the French Torah community. Rabbeinu Tam and the Ri were French scholars, not German. Rashi was the one who turned France into a center of Torah. When Rashi was born, there was very little Torah there when his birth happened. As a young boy during the Crusades, it's known that Rashi had no place to study in France, and he had to travel to Germany. So Rashi came to Worms to study in Worms under Rav Yitzchak ben Elezer Levi and Rav Yaakov ben Asher. The Rosh, he studied by Rav Yaakov ben Yakar. He studied by Rav Yaakov ben Yakar for a little bit, and that's where he learned. And then after some time, when he came back, when he was trained by the German Torah scholars, there was nothing in France, so he was forced to go to Germany. Because he went to Germany, he got everything from there, but came back home to France, and that became the new center of Jewish wisdom. A lot of people came up with Rashi. A lot of the comments on the Tosfos, a lot of the comments of the Tosfos on the Gemara were really... The French Tosfos were really Chachmei Tzarfat. They were German transports over to France. We don't have much from the German Torah scholars as far as Tosfos because they were killed during the Crusades. They were mamish killed during the Crusades, all of them. And we lost most of that. So our Torah Shebaal Peh that we have is a tradition maintained by Rashi and the Baalei Tosfos. And then it continues with the Rambam. If Judaism wouldn't have had the Rambam in the middle there, you also would have lost a big chunk. That's the difference between the Yerushalmi and the Bavli. A lot of the Yerushalmi is short pages, but very difficult. The commentaries guess at what they mean. They admit to guessing. They try to fill in a line here, fill in a line there, because there's no Rashi and Tosfos. Bavli we have laid out like a clear book because of Rashi and Tosfos. The Yerushalmi is very difficult. You look at Art Scroll, which came out with the English Yerushalmi. It's a mess. They're trying to piece together lines here, lines there. Yerushalmi is lacking because it didn't have the same, it wasn't bolstered by the same French community. Brett was bringing up before the Tosfos in Sanhedrin, Ayin Dalet, about why the Jews felt obligated to kill themselves at that time and each other in a circumstance of forced conversion. If they're physically taken and baptized by force, that's their action, what sin are they doing? I'm passive. You're schlepping me out of my home to make me convert. What am I doing over here? They shouldn't have had to kill themselves. So the answer is, Tosfos brings from Rabbeinu Tam that they weren't obligated to do so, but they thought that they considered any action over here as a gesture of idolatry, and therefore they should do it. There's a machlokas rishonim, a further machlokas, whether a parent has a right to kill the child in order to prevent them from converting to Christianity. That's we have tshuva. We have a tshuva Baalei Tosfos on that. So they didn't approve. The author of this kina definitely approved. The author of this kina is assuming that it was fine. There's two justifications that are given for it. One given by the Rush gives one. That in the case of, let's say for example, King Shaul, where he killed himself, impaled himself on his sword. So by King Shaul, they knew the enemy would capture him, would take him and torture him. So the Medrash says that Shaul asked the Amaleki to kill him because he was afraid of torture. So the Chacham, the Rosh says in Moed Katan, that under these circumstances, that if one is certain they're going to fall into the hands of the Goyim, to the enemy, one is permitted to kill their children and commit suicide. And number two, the Jews didn't think they'd be able to withstand the pressure of actively converting. So based on those are two defenses that are suggested, the King Shaul argument and the argument of withstanding the pressure. Based on that, they went ahead and they did it. They went and did it. Yeah, the Torah doesn't ask you to go through something you couldn't possibly handle. The Radvaz quotes Darcheya Darchei Noam as the source, that you just not expected to do that. So if he's has a mamish of, yeah, I mean, even Israeli soldier who's captured is never is, right, 100%.
And then they use him as bait, and it causes more.
Right. We don't know what the mindset is of the kidnapped Israeli soldiers. We never get too much of a chance to talk to them, unfortunately. We don't know if they're at the point where they wish to kill themselves. Let's do one more kina. Maybe we'll call it at that for us for today. Kina 23. There's so many more to do. Everyone should do on their own. There's the kina for the Churban Europa, the Holocaust kina that was written by the Baba Varebi. Many of the Siddurim print them in there. There's two versions, different ones that were made. But kina 23. It's an interesting kina. It's Ve'es Navi, my temple, Chatasi, Hashmima, V'dimasi, I let my tears stream down my cheeks. This kina is referring to the story in Gittin, Nun Chesamid Aleph, on the son and daughter of Rabbi Shmuel. The son and daughter of Rabbi Shmuel was taken captive by a different Roman slave owner. Each one got one of them. And because the son was very handsome and the daughter was very beautiful, the slave owner decided to marry the two of them off. They stick them in a room, they figure, you know what, let them mate with each other. The children will be beautiful and we'll get tons of money from the children. So they took the two slaves and they threw them into a room, a dark room, so they should mate with each other. And they were told about the plan. And since they were locked in a dark room, they couldn't see each other. And the girl is crying all night. You should remember, the daughter is Rabbi Yishmael. The girl is crying all night. How could the daughter, she's crying, how could the daughter of the high priest, Rabbi Yishmael Kohen Gadol, how could the daughter of the high priest be married to a slave? And he's crying all night. How could the son of a high priest take a maidservant for a wife? And in the and they couldn't bring each other to even touch each other. And as the morning came, they recognized each other. And they died while hugging, because distraught by their fate, they died while hugging. So Rav Soloveitchik asks, this is a beautiful piece in the new kinas. Rav Soloveitchik asks, what's this kina doing here? Two kinas before, you have Arzei Alvanon, the martyrs. Then you have Hechrishu Mimeni, which was the martyrs of German Jewry. Next should have been the next one, which is Mi Yiten Roshi, which is about the Crusades, also in Spiza. So what's this doing here? This random story of Rabbi Yishmael's kid. Why is this here, his kids? And number two, why do we need to remember Bichlal, the story of two kids? So many people were killed, thousands of people, communities. Why do we need the story of two kids? So possible answer number one is, whose responsibility is it to remember the faceless? Whose responsibility is it to remember those that history is going to forget? And the kin is saying it's our job. Every single Jew is worth being remembered. Every single Jew is worth being remembered. You can't forget it. And that's, by the way, one of the reasons we have Yisker. You know, you have Yisker on the high holidays. You have Yisker because someone should always remember those that are not going to be remembered. Who else is going to remember them if not the family? Or if not us who are here to say the kinos? That's why the Torah has such an emphasis on names, right? The Torah is always giving you the names, the family names. This one, ben this one, ben this one. You always have names, even when it doesn't make a difference to the Masorah. Even by families of Esav and Yishmael, you have all the names. Why all the names? Because the idea in the Torah is that it's very important to remember the name of just another person. To remember the name, to remember their story, to remember who they are. Another reason Rav Soloveitchik brings as to why we need the story of the two kids is because people could respond to a tragedy when it becomes more personal. If it becomes an entire community, it's too big. You can't relate to it. It's like they found in advertising that if you put a picture of too many people on there, people won't give charity to it. But if you put one kid who's starving, or one or two kids, people's hearts go out because they could relate on a one-to-one level. When you put too many people, people disassociate. So maybe Rav Soloveitchik says that's the point of this kina, that for some people the way to tap into the tragedy is to think that these were not just general stories of communities. These were personal, these were individual stories to think about. A third answer I thought is that maybe to think that not every survivor that survives makes it. Meaning we assume everyone who made it out of Auschwitz is a survivor and they made it. We don't realize how many people survive only to go back to a life which is not even surviving. To go back to a life of complete poverty, to go back to life in a community with more anti-Semitism, to go back to a life to find out that everyone you loved is gone. Many times those who survive don't really survive. And that's the story over here. These are two kids who survived. Rabbi Yishmael, their father was killed. They survived. They made it. But they mamish didn't survive. And we tend to think that every survivor, oh, Baruch Hashem, they're a survivor. We don't realize that in many of the instances of survival, that's no survival. That's no situation of survival. They have nothing. They mamish have worse than nothing over here. They're forced to sleep with each other and incestuous in order to create slaves, to create more slaves. And that's not a way to say a survivor survives. Say that the survivor survives over there. And that's this kina of a story of two simple Pasha people. It's our job to remember them. But more than that, I think possibly a fourth reason for this kina is that their loneliness, their isolation, that's our story. It's our story here in Golis, and none of us feel it, is to feel this isolation, this feeling of being this trapped situation of how have we come to this, which I started with last night, of the shiftless B'nai Israel. How did we ever get to this point? Okay, we'll say this kina 23.